You are listening to the Missio Tempe podcast. We are a church of missional communities, living as a family of missionary servants for the good of our city. For more information about our church, visit missiotempe.com. We hope this teaching encourages and challenges you to faithfully take up your role in the Missio Dei.
Thank you for gathering this afternoon. We're going to continue in our series in Psalm 23. The phrase we've been using is that to get to the joy of Easter, you have to journey through the desert of Lent. You don't have Easter without Lent. They always come together. Death and life is the pattern of God's story. And just to kind of give you a recap of where we've been journeying, Psalm 23:1 says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing." The truth is that you can live in abundance because you do lack nothing with the good shepherd. You don't need to operate from fear or scarcity. You always have enough. He doesn't run out. He doesn't run out of resources or time or emotional capacity or whatever it is. He is with you. He cares about you. But then Psalm 23:1 leads to the second verse, which is the most force of the psalm, which is, "He makes me lie down." Interestingly, that the force of the psalm is that he wants you to actually lie down in green pastures and lead you beside quiet waters to refresh your soul. And soul is this word that's been in so many ways abused and distorted, and we've read so many things into what it means. But soul is just like the wellspring of your entire life. The deepest part of your self experience is joy and love and refreshment. Maybe vibrancy is the best word to use. And then from there, it says in verse 3, "He guides me along the right paths for his namesake." And last week, we looked at those two ideas, paths and namesake. Paths is in a question, it's a question of wisdom in a sense of, who are you becoming? What's the trajectory of your life? What kind of legacy or path are you leading? And yes, there's a bunch of individual choices along the way, but really what the path that he guides me along the right paths is, he knows the path ahead, but he also gives you a lot of agency to choose which path to channel down. But the question is, who are you becoming? What is the trajectory of your life 30, 40, 50, 60, for some of the kids in our midst, 90 years from now? And for his name's sake, the beauty of the biblical story is that you take on God's name. You've been adopted as sons and daughters. And now, whatever your family history you come from, a new narrative gets to be told. I shared this last week, but in my family, there's been a real break from my great-grandparents or my grandparents to my parents, that Jesus came in and has in many ways shifted and shaped the family line. We carry on the name of Jesus now, and there's been ripple effects of that. Which leads us to the fourth verse. Now, Psalm 23 is in the shape of a V. It starts with really good, beautiful things that you need to hear. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. And then it begins to travel down. And verse 4 is maybe the most famous of the verses. "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." So would you stand? We're going to read Psalm 23 like we have been the last couple of weeks. Let's read this together. "The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." You can take a seat. There's two simple things I want to do with this fourth verse. This might be the slowest sermon series that you've ever been a part of. One verse a week, I mean, that's pretty crazy. But hopefully it's sinking deep into your bones and into your heart, into the way you think about God and his world. But Psalm 23, verse 4, I want to give you an assumption and a promise, an assumption and a promise. The assumption is this. This psalm does not read, and the truth of verse 4 is that it isn't a "if you will experience the darkest valley." It's a "when." you will experience it. Like that right there is the assumption of the psalm. Notice how it says, when you walk through the darkest valley. When, as in there's a time and location and space. It's not an if, as of, oh, maybe you will experience that. It's when you walk in the darkest valley, you will fear no evil, for he is with you. Interesting thing about suffering and pain is that no one can escape it. Doesn't matter how much money you make. Doesn't matter your ethnic background. Doesn't matter your place that you live. Doesn't matter young or old. Doesn't matter if you do everything right or you do everything wrong. No one escapes it. Suffering and pain and darkest valleys are part of what it means to be in a really broken world. Now, darkest valleys can be sometimes where we're led into them by Jesus himself. Jesus was led into the wilderness to start his ministry, and he leads us to those places to deal with things. Sometimes darkest valleys can be because of the consequences of our own sin or decisions that we've made that and have led us down a path that now we're in a lot of darkness. Or darkness can just be because you're in a really broken world that things are not the way they're supposed to be. Whatever the reason it is, the question is not if, but when you will experience that. One of the things that Keaton, who is my wife, and I process a lot, is we went to a small little Christian arts Bible college. And I'm sure somebody at the time was giving a really robust vision of the future of our Christian life. But as we've thought through different experiences over the last couple of weeks, we kind of turned to each other and said, can you imagine 10 years ago if someone were to tell you this would be your life? These would be your experiences. Like, what would you say? What would you do? Like, there wasn't a vision for it then, because the vision then was, in many ways, you're going to graduate college. You're going to go, the phrase of the university is, you're going to impact the world for Jesus Christ. Not just your city or even your own family or neighborhood or one other person, but the world, right? You're going to impact the world for Jesus Christ. And I believe all those things are all great and inspirational. But then I look at my own life, and maybe you do too, and I say, wow, like, this looks a lot different than what I imagined. The circumstances of my life are a lot different than I imagined. It's not an if, but a when you will experience the darkest valley. There's, in a sense, a myth that if you come to follow Jesus, that, like, in a sense, everything will go well. When actually the opposite is often true, right? It actually gets a lot harder. It gets a lot more complex. You're faced with situations that you never thought you would enter into. It's a myth, in a sense, to think that, oh, when this thing happens, then everything else will blossom and bloom, although it does at times. But there's a lot of weeds along the way. Interestingly, the Apostle Paul, in writing his letters, he says, with great joy, that we share in both the death and the life of Jesus. Not just the resurrection, but we also share in the death. And it says, Paul says, he carries in his own body the death of Jesus so that the life might be displayed. If you're a follower of Jesus, that is what you've signed up for, to both carry the death and the life together. It's not an if, but a when. Here's my simple question I'd love for you to, you can process with one other person next to you or with a group around you, you can decide. But as you think about the picture of a dark valley, you can play around with that picture. You can think about what that is actually like. Maybe you can think of a parallel of what a dark valley would be today. But when you think about the picture there, if it's not an if and it's a when, like, where have you experienced a dark valley? Or where are you now experiencing a dark valley? Darkness is confusing. It's disorienting. Maybe this is helpful to use this language. Darkness is, if you've been in a really dark room or a space and you can't even see your own hand in front of your face, like, it is disorienting. You don't know which way is up or down. It's like being deep within the ocean, not knowing which way to swim. That's the picture of darkness here. Now, the good news we're going to get to is there's a rod and a staff and all those other things, but just focus on the darkness for a second. Like, where have you experienced that? And if you'd be bold and you would like to share it, turn to somebody around you and just say, hey, here's where I've experienced great darkness. And not if you're listening, like, don't go quick to trying to solve it or cast light on it. We'll do that in a second. But just listen. Listen to where someone has experienced darkness, loss, disorientation, confusion, suffering, pain, unexplained questions that they don't know have answers to. All those things are wrapped up in darkness. I'll give you a couple of minutes, then I'll call us back. Let me call you back. Definitely not enough time to enter into the darkness together, but at least maybe to start. So that's the assumption. It's not if but when, but there's a promise. But the promise is not that you will find quick escape from the darkest valley. The promise is not that you will exit it at any point during this part of God's story. The promise is not that you will have all the questions answered around your pain and suffering and darkness. And the promise is not that there will be a simple solution to your ailment. It's not that. It's none of those things. The promise of Psalm 23:4 is real simple, that God will enter into the pain with you. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He guides you along the right paths. And even though you walk through the darkest valley, I'm with you. Fear no evil. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's the promise. Interestingly, if you think about the phrase "do not fear" or "fear no evil," you can have the same exact experience in a lot of darkness and pain and suffering by yourself or with somebody else, and it's quite different. I heard somebody tell a story about being in a car accident, and they got hit horribly in an intersection. And somebody was like there and saw it and ran right when the accident happened, ran up to the car and began comforting and caring for this person. And she was describing how, like, and she has no fear associated with that event because she was met really quickly with presence, helpful presence, where this woman is like almost an angel, right? Had given calm, made sure the kids were okay in the back seat, like all those things. Think about in my house, my oldest hates going into dark rooms, so he drags his little sister to do it for him. It's like, bro, come on. Should be flipped. But he's like, hey, you know, Cozy, will you go with me? And the fear dissipates, right? So it's not that the light then turns on always. It's not, hey, I'm going to go turn the light on. Like, even we're trying to practice, like, hey, like, you can go down there yourself. Like, you're safe. I'm right here. I can see you as you're walking down the hall. But there's something when someone else is with you. Yes, God cares about, in a sense, healing and restoring, but he wants to enter into the pain with you first. This has been a very challenging week for the Mio house. Henry got to the hospital on Sunday night at the end of the service. And then last night we were in the hospital again after being discharged. And he's out currently, so he just got out like an hour ago. I don't really know what's going on, but he's been in the hospital a lot. And apart from the hospital, because Henry has Down syndrome, we interact a lot with different medical institutions and branches of medicine. And because of the Down syndrome diagnosis, often much of his experience is channeled and filtered through that lens. Becomes a catch-all for things that are wrong. Becomes an explanation for things that might come up. But it's also the primary thing people first focus on when we interact with different institutions. And not only that, when he has therapies that come to our house, it's the moment a person comes into the room, at least some of our experience, not entirely, they're so focused on quickly evaluate. Can he do certain things? Where is he at developmentally? They move quickly to cure, but often without care. Cure and care. I think the picture of Psalm 23 here is that our good shepherd is one who offers, yes, great cure. He's going to come back and redeem all things, but he enters in with care. And if you don't have both, things get sideways. Henry Nouwen says this. He says, our tendency is to run away from the painful realities or try to change them as soon as possible. But cure without care makes us into rulers, controllers, manipulators, and prevents a real community from taking shape. Cure without care makes us look for quick changes, impatient and unwilling to share each other's burdens. And so cure can often become offending instead of liberating. It is therefore not so strange that cure is not seldom refused by people in need. Not only have individuals refused help when they did not sense a real care, but oppressed minorities have resisted support and suffering nations have declined medicine and food when they realized that it was better to suffer than to lose self-respect by accepting a gift out of a non-caring hand. Jesus offers care and cure. He enters into the pain first to then lead you out of it. But it might take some time. This is interestingly why one of my experiences I've been learning a lot in my own life is when people begin to lose agency of their lives and people begin to make decisions for them, they rebel against it. Not just because they're rebellious people, but because they recognize that cure is being offered without care. This is why, and I've thought of several stories this week, this is why often elderly who are in their home by themselves long past when they should be refuse to get help because they would rather be in that space and hope that some kind of care would meet them rather than just get a quick cure to their problem and take away their agency. The beauty here is that Jesus, as the good shepherd, enters in with both care and cure. Care and cure. C.S. Lewis has this quote, and I'm gonna be really frank. I half believe it's true, but I think it's good. It says, God whispers to us in our pleasure, but shouts in our pain. He shouts in our pain. I want you to think of that space that you thought of earlier, the darkness. And now, instead of moving to a quick fix or solution, I'd love for you to process with friends or by yourself. How is Jesus meeting you there? Like, what are you noticing about him? And again, focus less on the cure. Like, he cares about that deeply. The end of the story that's coming is the restoration of all things, including whatever you're currently carrying. But that could be many thousands of years from now, depending on where you're at in history. So here's the question. How is Jesus entering in with you right now? So the question maybe is less we need to ask Jesus, how is he going to fix my problem? And more, what is Jesus trying to say or do, or how is he wanting to be with me in the current moment? Because he enters in, yes, to eventually lead you out, but he first enters in. This is why in the Gospels you see Jesus not just use his words to heal people, but often his touch. This is why people weren't healed in isolation. Even the woman who had been bleeding for 12 years, she could have just grabbed his cloak and went on, and no one would have said anything. But Jesus recognized her in front of the community because he's not just offering cure, he's offering care as well. He's touching people he shouldn't touch. He's interacting with people he shouldn't interact with. He's sharing a table with people that he shouldn't share tables with. Because he's not just concerned about cure. He cares for people and enters in. So turn to some people around you. It's maybe a hard question to answer. Maybe you don't know. Often you don't in the midst of whatever you're experiencing and not till afterwards. But if you were to give a guess, what do you think Jesus is doing right now in the midst of your darkness? Where is he sitting? What is he saying? How is he comforting as the good shepherd? The kids are going to be joining us here. They already are in many ways. Let me lead you to the table. One of the folks that have shaped Missio Dei over the last 15 years the most is a guy named Tim Keller. Tim Keller is a pastor, has been a pastor of a church in New York City for many years. And beginning of COVID, when we were doing some Zoom gatherings, I remember vividly one Sunday finding out the news that Tim Keller had cancer. And it was pretty bad. And that was in 2020, May or Easter-ish of 2020. And there was a lot of thought he wouldn't live for very long. And if you've followed him from afar, like, he is the most gentle, kind, suffering person that I don't know, that I've experienced. And he has written a lot of stuff on suffering and pain, probably different than he would write it 10, 20 years ago from his own experience. But he says this, and you need to hear this if you're going to be led to the table. Yes, he says, yes, Jesus is the Lord of history, but he is also the vulnerable one who entered that history and became subject to its darkest forces. You're going to come to the table right here to celebrate, yes, the Lord of history, but the one who took on the greatest darkness you could experience. The one who, for a moment, for a time, experienced separation from the love of God that he had enjoyed his entire life, his entire existence for all of eternity. The one who, when he was killed, darkness swept over the land. Disorientation broke out among his disciples, and I bet in his own heart too, as he tried to figure out and how to make sense of this plan that God had put in place long ago. But he didn't stay in darkness. We're going to celebrate in a couple of weeks that on the third day, on early sunrise, purposefully sunrise as in being the light coming in, Jesus resurrected from the grave. And yes, he offers care, but he's coming with cure as well. And so I just want to invite you as we come to the table to experience the Lord of history, yes, but also the one who has entered in and been subject to its darkest forces. Would you stand with me? Let's repeat this together, and then I'm going to invite you to the table. You have Chris Hamilton and Jonathan Kobeluck, two wonderful people serving you, the Lord's table, and I will stay away from you in serving. Let's say this together. This is the mystery of our faith. Christ has died, Christ is risen, and Christ will come again. Come and feast.